Welcome to the Matrix. This is Dishwashing Soap. With me is Dishwasher and Spork.
Hello.
Clink, 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 clink.
Hi, Fresh Spork. You can't pick up the salad because your tongs aren't long enough. It's too spoony.
Too spoony for salad and too many holes for soup.
Oh. The least perfect instrument for eating.
I think sporks are pretty great.
Yeah, I don't know, but most sporks are more spoon than forks, so shouldn't they be called foons?
Spoons.
Well, you really only need a little bit. You only need to puncture the whatever.
Just a little bit to puncture. Grab onto it.
Well,
there should be
two. There should be sporks, which are mostly fork and very little spoon, and there's foons, which are mostly spoon and very little fork. That way you've got...
You know what else we have, though? Hmm. Thumbs.
We do.
So we can eat with our hands.
Vulcans are against that. T'Pol's like, we don't eat without silverware.
Well,
I bet Vulcans have both. They gotta be efficient.
Spoons and sporks. Foons and sporks.
Foons and sporks. They gotta have all of them to meet any demand so they don't have to use their hands.
How about like a melon spoon? You ever have those?
Oh, melon mauler.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like an ice cream scoop, sort of, right?
Well, why not just chopsticks then? Like,
welcome to Utensils.
This is the Utensils podcast.
No, we are talking about Matrix Revolutions, the 2003 movie.
Oddly, this is a more intellectual discussion than anything that happens in the movie.
I was thinking we should go over our thoughts and then do the recap. What do you think?
Ooh.
We're going to flip it on its head, huh?
Why not?
Complete revolutions, eh?
Revolutions. That would be really weird. Absolutely. But first, we do have some Star Trek news. So Pulitzer Prize winning author Michael Chabon. Like the yogurt?
Yes, he's named after yogurt.
The yogurt is named after him.
You shall be my son, Pulitzer named Prize. After yogurt.
Well, they couldn't name the Pulitzer Prize after him since that was already a thing, so they named the yogurt after him. So he told, he's apparently going to be the showrunner for Star Trek Picard, which is fantastic news. If he's a Pulitzer Prize winning author, hopefully he knows something about Star Trek. It says he's been a lifelong fan, so that's good, and he's been in the writer's room, apparently, according to this article. So, I mean, that sounds...
And hopefully he knows good. How to write.
Maybe. I don't know if... don't they hand the Pulitzer Prize out to anybody nowadays?
I don't know. I'm assuming you have to have some monicum of authorship, penmanship.
I mean, I hope so. But, I mean, it's hopefully promising. I don't know anything about him, honestly. You know, I mean, hopefully that's in good hands. I've never heard of him really before, never followed any of his work, so that I know of. I mean, maybe he's written something that I was, like, amazed by. I just don't recognize his name at all.
The odd thing about the Picard show, it's only one season and that's it. I don't know if they're going to do spinoffs after that, but...
From what I heard, it's supposed to be four seasons, like four 10-episode arcs.
What?
Yeah.
I only heard it with the one. Really? You heard there's going to be four seasons?
Yeah, it's going to be limited run, four seasons. I mean, that's what they're shooting for.
Really? Interesting.
I believe I read that somewhere.
Okay.
I don't think I'm pulling it out of my ass.
Making it up, folks. Give me your links. Tell me your facts. I got to know this stuff. I'm just kidding.
What's your source?
my source is that CBS tell me that there will be four seasons of Star Trek Picard. No, I don't know.
Patrick Stewart called me. He said, David.
Alex Kurtzman called me personally and told me no. I don't
We're
know.
Twitter
I,
friends.
I feel like I remember reading an article. Like I mean, there's an article that was posted recently to our Setaholics group saying that Section 31 was going to shoot right after season 3 wrapped, And I'm pretty sure I said that specifically toward the end of season two. And I guess that article was rewritten or something. Because, I mean, I remember reading it before, and it came up like it was new. So I remember reading something to the effect that they were planning, like, a limited series for Picard. Like, a couple of seasons. Maybe four is too many. I don't know. I think I read that. I don't want to present this as truth, because I do want to speak about truth in news and Star Trek really briefly, because it's hard to refute things without evidence. But, you know, so I posted an article probably a couple weeks ago about Alex Kurtzman's 10-year plan for Star Trek and our Syntholics group. And so right after that was posted, someone commented in the group saying that wasn't Robert Kurtzman fired? And there's no evidence that I've seen to support that, considering this article came out right on the heels of, I believe, Midnight's Edge and Doomcock. I think they share some of the same quote-unquote sources that say, they from what I follow, they usually reciprocate some of the same news. Or facts, quote-unquote facts, that he's been fired. And there's nothing that I can tell that he's been fired. They say they have sources saying he's been fired. I would just say take what you hear with a grain of salt on the internet and YouTube videos. These people claim they have sources. And, of course, you can't name anonymous sources. So you can say anything you want if you say you have a source. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I don't know. I don't like speaking from an air of authority unless I know I've read it somewhere. And if I did read it somewhere, it doesn't necessarily mean it's fact. But I you know, it's just kind of how it is. So just take things with a grain of salt. Don't believe everything you see on the internet, because I personally believe that they seem to spread lots of misinformation out there, and they kind of rile up the people who already don't like the series.
Yeah, so there's a lot of detractors for Discovery for a host of reasons. Some people don't like the idea that it's behind a paywall. Some people don't like that it's just new Star Trek. Some people don't like that, you know, there's a black woman who's kind of the head of the show, running the star of the show. And I mean, there's lots of reasons why people are kind of detractors. And the thing is that it's okay for certain things not to like. Like, we often get pissed off about the writing in Discovery, but we don't have any bones about people with, because of different ethnicities or anything, or because they're male or female, or because they're gay or straight. That's all bullshit in my book. It's more of, we're always looking for just quality.
Just storytelling. Quality story. And writing is kind of lacking. And that's our opinion on the thing. And these people, Midnight's Edge and Doomcock, they can hate Discovery as much as they want. That is their opinion. That is their right. They can vocalize their opinion. It's their channel. They can vocalize their opinion in any way they want. What I don't like is they seem to speak from a place of authority on matters that are not confirmable.
Right. And my issue is with those types of channels. It's like, if they once in a while said something positive about Discovery or something that CBS All Access is doing, then I'd be like, oh, okay, well, they're not shitting on it constantly. They're just reporting when something bad happens. Just like we will, give glowing reviews about an episode that we love, then we'll be like, what the fuck happened in this episode? So it's just, when it's always slanted in one direction, makes me dubious.
Yeah, because I mean, because both us and Trek Yards, we basically, like, if we loved it, we'll say it. Like, it was glowing. We will say that what they did right or what they did wrong. Some episodes are way more right than wrong. Some episodes are more right or wrong than right, to our opinion. But that's always how that's how I always try to present things. I mean, we say things like in jest as if they were true, but I'm hoping you guys understand, like, we're kind of a parody channel. Parody podcast. Anything we say out of a supposed place of authority is usually meant as a joke.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Or at least when I say it.
Well, I mean, we try. I mean, it's always just opinion here. I mean, we're not walking in with saying we have information on what's Alex Kurtzman, what he ate for dinner, and what his stool sample looked like afterwards. So we don't know these things.
But what I think would be hilarious, if Alex Kurtzman was these guys' source and was trolling them by giving them all this misinformation to report, and he's just laughing at them. I think that would be the funniest thing ever.
Yeah. I think he's too busy for that shit, but
I know he's too busy to troll some like low end YouTube. But I think it would be hilarious if that was the truth of the matter,
right?
No. Like, they're getting the information from the person they hate the most. They hate Alex Kurtzman, and like all this. It seems like they do. I don't know if they actually hate him, but just the way they present things, it seems like they don't care for him very much.
Right, right. Well, Well, I don't know, man. I guess time will tell if anything they say is true. So far, everything has been not provable, and except this Alex Kurtzman thing that they said that he was fired, but it doesn't look like that so far.
It doesn't seem that way. I mean, he's basically, I mean, Alex Kurtzman may be becoming less and less involved with Star Trek episodes or Star Trek series day to day, but that's because he's basically the Kevin Feige of Star Trek, where he is basically overseeing all these little shows and pitching all these different ideas. He doesn't have time to be, like, in the minutiae of everything. So if he's showrunning Discovery, I don't know if he's still showrunning Discovery for Season 3. I don't remember if that's changed hands or not. But if he's still showrunning Season 3 and not showrunning Picard, I mean, showrunning one show is a big enough job, and being an overseer, that doesn't mean he's not involved, I don't think. I mean, I feel like he'll become less and less involved on the minutiae because he's got to pull the strings from all over the place.
Right, right, right. Okay. Well,
so do we want to turn Matrix Revolutions on its head and give opinions first?
We definitely could do that if we want.
Do you want, though? You don't have to.
It's called Revolution, so that means we could go around and around. So we could just spin it upside down. You turn me right around, baby, right around.
Like a mega baby, right around. Who was it that did a Godsmack? Is it Godsmack that did a version of that?
They might have.
I think it was Godsmack. I love that song. Anyway.
Dead or Alive did the original song.
I think David had probably liked it the least, so I think we should make him go last.
Yep.
So we can make you go first.
All right, so I'm going to give my reactions to Matrix Revolutions first before the...
Maybe we could do, like, we do Discovery, quick reactions, and then the recap, and then a deep dive.
Okay, that's fine. So going first, this movie, Matrix Revolution, while interesting in some aspects because we get kind of all the different threads kind of tidied up at the end, more or less, it doesn't have any of the snap that the first movie or even the second movie had, in my opinion. It's more of just straight out action movie that doesn't have any real thoughts given behind it other than what Neo has to go through to go, you know, to get to the Machine City. Mm-hmm. And while there's some back and forth with the
let's go to Machine City where the girls are pretty and look like babies for some reason. Ew.
Yeah, everything looks like, yeah, a baby face talking to you. So
full that woman body baby face.
Baby face.
Well, they grow humans, so I mean, the baby's probably the easiest to imitate, especially since their features aren't super defined.
Possibly. I think that this movie, while it has like all the elements, it just, something about it doesn't quite snap. It just, you kind of felt like, oh, that's the end of it. And I know sometimes endings are hard to do, but I don't know. I just felt like they could have, I mean, we don't really see the fate of what happens to Neo at the end other than him being carted away. So we're assuming he died, but there's no real, we don't know if that's true or not, or if he was just, you know, fed back into the source, whatever that is. We get some answers. I don't know. That's even strange, too, because at the very end, we have the architect and the oracle speaking at the park. And she says to him, what about the people who don't want to leave or who want to leave? And he'd be like, they're allowed to leave if they want. Is she talking about programs or is she talking about people? I mean, you assume she's talking about people, but, you know, you just had the whole thing with Agent Smith and not wanting to go back into the source and becoming a problem. And then we have like the little Indian girl. What's her name?
Sati,
who, you know, the parents are trying to save her, you know. It's kind of weird. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of question marks left there, and I don't think there's any real answers other than the fact that Zion is saved. There's some kind of armorist between the machines and the humans, and that's about it.
Mm.
And you're kind of left lacking, too, because humans didn't really save all those people who are in those pods. they're not really freeing them. They're still in servitude to the machines. So you're sort of like, you know, yeah.
So are they going to be woken up? Are the machines going to have to find a way to live in harmony with humanity and vice versa?
Yeah, I just kind of felt
if they
like
they want to.
Yeah, would they? And that's a whole nother subject we can get into about would you rather live in that world or would you rather live in the Matrix? Right. You know, and you know, like we saw what's his name from the first movie who wanted to be reloaded into
Cypher,
the Matrix.
Yeah.
Cypher, he didn't want to know anything anymore. I don't want to know anything anymore. Just put me right back in the Matrix. I, you know, erase my memory of everything. So. That's where I'm at. I wasn't a terrible movie when it comes to movie standards. Like there, I've seen way worse movies. I just think that this movie, for the first movie being such a wonderfully crafted, you know, first movie, the second movie, like we said, the pacing's off, but there's a lot of great aspects to it. This movie, it feels like there's barely the pacing's nowhere. It's just kind of one fast, constant run. And I don't feel like I walked out any smarter or more thoughtful from it. But that's me. Holly, if you want to go ahead.
Yeah. So I did feel like it was a complete story. I mean, as far as like its transition from one film to the next, I thought that it transitioned well. But I feel like they didn't focus on the same stuff throughout the whole movie. So it was kind of like misdirection. Like you thought this was going to be the plot or you thought that this was the whole point and it ended up being something completely different. Or like a lot of the movie took place of just fighting robots and I don't know. It was cool. It was definitely cool. And they figured out texture for this film.
Yeah, things changed a little bit on this one.
Which
sure.
is funny because they filmed it all together. I guess they just had more time to edit the second one.
Yeah, maybe.
But, you know, it's. I did have a couple of thoughts while the movie was going on. And it's really more about today's society rather than the film itself. But you guys know how I feel. The listeners probably don't hear me every time I talk about it. But the whole feminist thing that's going on about how, you know, women aren't represented well, there are so many badass female characters of, you know, black and white and, you know, masculine, feminine throughout the whole film that just do really badass things, and I thought that was really cool. And not that it's something I always gravitate to because gender, I don't care, but it's just funny to me that this is a film from what year did this one come out?
2003 as well. Yeah, 2003.
Oh, it's just three. Okay, yeah. So even way back in 2003, you know, they started in 99 or 98. 99. So, like, why are people still bitching about that? But I enjoyed it. I mean, I think I got bored once. I don't know.
There's definitely some points where, yeah, there's definitely some parts where you're just like, I don't know. It just the fighting
scenes. I like
it
drawn on a bit.
The fighting scenes go on for so goddamn long, and you're just like, yeah. God damn it! Just like, you know, it's just like you become numb to it, you know. And not that they were lacking visually, they're very cool, but just like, okay, Sentinels are invading. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of thought the whole Smith thing was weird. Like, not really explained.
Meaning, which part of it?
Well, as we discuss it, we'll get into it more. But that's one of the things I was just like, this feels like, why is this the main. Why is this the climax of the film? Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
So,
oh, absolutely. It's the whole movie became. I mean, the whole point of the trilogy became Neo punches Smith. When it comes down to it, all the promise the first movie offered was left in the dust after the first movie ended. When it's like, oh wait, we've got to cash in on this. Let's forget everything about the first movie except for the visuals of the kung fu, and we'll double down on the visuals of the kung fu and forget all the stuff that made people think and scratch their heads and want to watch the first movie over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. Dave, what did you... I mean, you said you were going to watch this. With,
no, Dave.
Do you have more to say, Holly?
No.
Okay. Dave, you said you were going to watch this with new baby eyes. And...
were you successful?
Leave your prejudices outside the door.
Well, you know, oddly enough, I didn't hate this movie nearly as much watching it this time as I did when I walked out of the movie theater.
It's not a terrible movie. In my opinion, it's not as good as the other two.
Nearly as good in any way, shape, or form, except for maybe the texture, like Holly said. The texture and the visual effects got a little bit better. But I didn't hate this movie as much, but I think I was able to... I couldn't watch it with true baby eyes, because if I watched it with true baby eyes, I'd be just as hateful as I did the first time I watched the movie. But watching it, understanding that I know I was going to be disappointed, and knowing that they never confirm the Matrix of the Matrix per se, there's still tons of evidence and tons of visuals that point to it, and tons of things that happen in my mind that point to Matrix of the Matrix in the movie. I just hate that they never said it one way or the other. They just... it kind of ignore it. That's what disappointed me. But just if you want to hear what I thought about it when I walked out of the movie theater in 2003, I was so livid. I was like, I was waiting for the end of the credits to roll, and I was waiting for them to say, "Psych, the real Matrix 3 will be out in a year," or something like that. Because I just felt like, because it was like a 6-month turnaround between the second one and the third one. It seemed too quick.
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe they just like made this as a joke movie. I literally thought it was a joke movie because there was no thought-provoking moments in this movie at all. Merovingian didn't do anything interesting. The architect had a line in the movie. It was just Neo punches Smith. And like, that's not what The Matrix was supposed to be about. I mean, like, from the way the first movie was set up, and the way the second movie talked about choice and the illusion of choice, and the third movie is just Neo punches Smith. And that was super disappointing to me, that there was no follow-through on any of the thought-provoking things that made the first movie interesting and made the couple parts of the second movie interesting.
It's an interesting thing, too, because I was thinking about this as well, that the movie kind of leaves you cold when it comes to answers and, like, the fully... I don't know, everything. It doesn't spell things out. It leaves you a bunch of threads to pull on if you feel like you want to.
But it doesn't even give you all the metaphysical stuff the first two movies did to let you try to piece it together. They just left out the puzzle pieces of the third movie.
Yeah, they didn't give you any of the deep philosophies or anything else. They just kind of just wrapped the story arcs, and they told it the end of what happens with the conflict at Zion, what the robots were going to do with the humans and the Matrix and stuff like that. But you don't get all those nice little like tasty bits of information that makes the other two movies far more interesting.
There's zero intrigue in the third movie.
Yeah.
Like the first two movies had lots of intrigue. There's like a full puzzle to look at and to explore into like what's hidden in this little thing. And the third movie is just a border with nothing in the middle. Mm-hmm. It's just void of thought and wrapping things up. None of the promise from the first two movies are brought, except for fight scenes, I guess. It's just sad to see the movie that was a beautiful bridge between smart science fiction, that because the first movie made you think. It's like a good science fiction movie. It'll make you think and question, and it brings up great discussion with your nerd friends and with your friends and just whatever. Like, great discussion, great thought, and then nothing in the third one. It's just like, what happened? Were these made by the same people? It doesn't feel like it.
Hmm. I think there's a few little fragments that we could get into, but anyways, it doesn't have everything that the first movie, and like we said, the second movie doesn't quite live up to the first movie, but it has some wonderful moments in it, and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it still is worthy. But this one, like I said, it's not a terrible movie. It just doesn't have that. Doesn't have it. Whatever that is, it's there.
Yeah. And David, I did go and I re-listened to the discussion with the architect, mm-hmm. and it really, it just instilled more of the feeling that he was lying to me. And like that
the
he
one
was
line...
just saying everything was just self-preservation. And I just felt like he, you know, all those incarnations of Neo, they could still have been just something fabricated by the architect to persuade Neo in whatever way he wanted. I'm just saying that's, okay. I did listen, I actually, instead of watching it, put it on and I just listened to it. So I wasn't distracted by any visuals. Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying set aside. Like, I see what you're saying. Yeah. It just the speech wasn't telling me that. So well, I just wanted you to know.
I'm glad you got the.
I just wanted you to know. I did, and I tried, and I it didn't pull. It didn't inspire that thought in me.
If I can just interrupt real quick, Dave. I just think that you just have to remember that. Like I said before, I think the other two movies gave you these threads that you can pull on off this tapestry of the story, and you can pull all sorts of ideas and glean meanings and deeper maybe conspiracies or other things going on. That's what's made these movies, these two, at least the first two movies, interesting, where this one just doesn't give you anything more other than just a carry through of the story. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to The Matrix Within Matrix, I mean, it's never said exactly that's what it is. It's just that
it's neither confirmed nor denied in any of the movies, but there's more like visual clues and evidence in the third movie. The fact that after Neo's blinded, he can see Smith through the code. I mean, all these shots of him seeing the robot city through code, like it's still
that can also be explained by whatever makes him the one. You know, that's still not.
Nah.
Really, that's still not
the train station. The train station is also evidence of Matrix in a Matrix because it's a mini matrix that connects the outer matrix and the inner matrix.
Power line.
No, it connects the two matrixes because the guy's like he wants to protect his daughter. He can't go into the regular matrix, so he made a deal with the Mirror Dimension to give his daughter. To the Oracle so she can live a normal life in the regular Matrix, and he and his wife are going to go back to the other Matrix where they have to live a more mechanical life.
I think they're trying to hide her within the Matrix that she would be seen. That's what I got from hiding Satie into the Matrix. But
they're still like they kept saying that the train station was a connection between your world and our world, as in mm-hmm. your world, the real world
the
is still another Matrix.
World.
It's. Their computer programs moving in between.
They say what kind of computer programs they are, but they can be computer programs in the real world and not have physical being. Like, you know, a program is a program is a program, but if it's in the middle, you know.
But why would a machine procreate in that way if there wasn't a physical It doesn't really follow. Like, it's still that screams Matrix within a Matrix to me. Screams it from the top of the rooftops.
Okay.
I think it also comes down to is you see what we want to see or see what.
Philip commented in the group and he was saying that you know he thinks a Matrix within a Matrix is a way to fill in for bad writing. And I mean maybe, but I mean like I thought it just seemed like it was presented. Like, you know, I try to read into foreshadowing. I mean, foreshadowing is a thing in movies. And in writing. And it's foreshadowed in the second movie a lot, to me. And it's foreshadowed more in the third movie. It's just not, it's neither confirmed nor denied. I know the Wachowskis, I think, officially said later on there was no Matrix in a Matrix. But, I mean, like, then they wrote the movies awfully because there's tons of foreshadowing.
Can I mention, though, I think last week I talked about how in the first film... Neo is like covered in the mirror goo, and then happened, and then that's how Smith kind of spreads. Mm-hmm. And then they had that again this time. I think it was planned from the first film because that is, I feel like that was still foreshadowing of what happens at the end of the film.
I mean, I kind of agree with Aaron where it's just like the way they could do the special effect. It's just a cheap way of doing the special
effects. Hey, I mean, maybe they had an idea behind that way before that, and they just threw that in there just to be freaky, and then, you know, they were like, hey, this could be part of more than just that. You know, obviously when they did the first Matrix movie, they must have watched that movie through the edits and all the different, you know, they must have watched it a zillion times, and so they memorized that movie like crazy. Mm-hmm. So maybe they were like, yeah, we could see things, because sometimes you could backwrite things that, you know, make sense too later on. So it's very possible. It is possible, Holly, that maybe they had an idea for it and they just couldn't get into it, or I don't know. I mean, and then what the success of the movie gave them, gave them a way to write all that stuff into the movie as well. So I don't know.
I just feel like the theme
none
of control.
None of us will ever know.
No, I mean, yeah, that's true. But I just feel like the theme of the second movie was so much about control that the ultimate control would be a Matrix within a Matrix. I mean, that's the ultimate form of control. You're controlling them on so many different levels. You think they're free. They think they're free, and they're still under your control. They're playing the game, which is exactly what the reincarnation of the Matrix 6 times so far it is. It's just a game. They play it over and over and over again to keep the humans as batteries. I mean,
I'm still not convinced that they were capable of destroying Zion over and over and over again and repopulating.
Well, it doesn't make – I mean, Merovingian
confirmed
that's
why I think he was a lying piece of shit.
But he's not lying. Merovingian confirms there has been multiple iterations of the Matrix, and so does the Oracle. So does Smith. Everyone's saying it. I mean, like – and then at the end of the third Matrix, the only thing that the architect basically says is, hey, I'm not human. I'm not a liar. I mean,
yeah, but we know from the Mirror Ave, what was that train station called?
Mobile Ave.
Mobile Ave. There's a discussion about love being a human emotion, but it's really just a word for a connection.
Sure.
And programs can have connections, so. I think he's a lying piece of shit.
I mean, there's...
I don't trust him as far as I can throw him. And Holly, with your bad hip, you shouldn't be throwing any.
But the thing is, I just don't understand why you think he's got a reason to lie. He's totally in control, especially if there's a Matrix within a Matrix. There's
he's
nothing...
not in control.
He's completely in control. If there is a Matrix in a Matrix, there's nothing Neo can do to prevent it from happening.
If he was in control, Neo wouldn't have been woken up. He wouldn't have to deal with.
Yes, you would have been woken up because it's part of the game. It's part of the game. Everything is part of the game. The only thing that would change this time in the game was Smith and Trinity. Like the Smith angle is what changed the loop. Well, because that's what the Matrix turned into.
If Smith and Neo are opposites, then Smith would be present each time.
Okay,
Okay, go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say there's more at play than just that. So, yes, Smith is obviously a huge thorn in the architects and the Matrix side by him just becoming a virus, just taking over everything in the Matrix by the time we get to Matrix Revolutions. Trinity obviously has some things to play with. It's the funny thing is that I think one of the underlying parts of the revolutions is love. I mean, love is what makes when Neo gets the choice to be going in the architect's TV room, he can go back to the source and save Zion or save Trinity. He chooses Trinity. Mm. Where, you know, logically, if you were just thinking just coldly without emotion, you'd be like, I have to save Zion. So that's I'll go through this door. But instead, he said, fuck Zion, I'm saving Trinity. Mm-hmm. So he chooses love. When we see the parents of Sati, and they're like, we are breaking the rules because we love our daughter. And this is, love is a connection. Yes, it's just a word, but it's a connection. And we do things because of love. And sometimes they are not logical. And maybe that is the free will. I have a ton of stuff to talk about free will that I want to get into at some point.
Maybe we should just skip the recap and just get into it.
Yell at each other.
I think we should talk about do a recap. And maybe I'll do it faster than normal, but But actually, there isn't a lot to talk about in this movie.
They fight.
And a lot of it is flying and fighting.
I think the love aspect, because you have the idea of the Oracle that gives free will. Love gives you an idea that it might break what you normally would do for instead of just the purely utilitarian reasons of why you do anything, you know, like, you know, you have to save this person, or let's just say something even simpler, like, you know, I need to go to work, or I want to go see, you know, the person I love today. You can do one of those two things. Well, yeah, work is the responsible thing because, you know, you have to pay your bills and you have, you know, to, you know, you have to have a career at whatever you're doing, or I want to go see the person I love. And so maybe blow work off and go see the person you love instead. And call in sick, you know, that kind of thing. Sure, maybe that's part of the whole scheme of, you know, that what the universe is pushing you towards. But that wasn't expected from your boss. It wasn't expected by your coworkers when you leave them, you know, out in the cold. So I don't know. I mean, there's stuff like that that you have to consider as well, that maybe love is something that the computer or the machines aren't completely understanding.
Oh, I agree. I don't think they are completely understanding. And also him choosing Trinity was a little bit of a bump in the Matrix. But I think the Matrix still has a contingency plan, because they destroy Zion, then they reset it themselves without letting Neo reset it. Because the way it sounds is like every single time it happens, Neo is both the beginning and end of the Matrix, because that's what Morpheus was saying. Morpheus is saying the original one, you know, he freed himself from the Matrix and he saved people and brought them to Zion. So that's the beginning of each iteration of the Matrix, but they're not understanding that the one, because everything was a method of control, because the Oracle told Morpheus about the one so that
the
game could continue.
This movie kind of irked me too at the end of it, because the Oracle is like, you know, like, she's still good. And it's like, yeah, but you were kind of like playing Neo and everybody, Morpheus, because you're feeding them the prophecy bullshit.
The Oracle is not good. The Oracle is just as bad, quote unquote, as the Architect.
But the Oracle did take a chance with some certain things, because she knew what was going to happen if Agent Smith comes. She must have seen something with Smith, something happening with him. Maybe she didn't. I don't know.
She couldn't see past. I don't know what the decision was of hers.
She
couldn't see past her decision. So
a lot of the plot written around the Oracle this time about her making it a sacrifice and stuff, was that just because the actress died?
Yeah, Gloria Foster died, and it went during the second film, and so they had to use Mary Alice as the.
So I feel like all that quote unquote plot around her being different and her dying and, you know, her choice causing her to be different was just bullshit made up to cover for the actress dying, and it didn't add to the plot at all. I mean,
it didn't add, but it didn't take away.
Oh, I'm not saying it did. I'm just saying they were trying to add to the plot. They were trying to add to it, but it didn't really do anything. It was blatantly cover up.
Or they weren't trying to just add, they were just trying to cover it up, and that was the best way they knew how.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but they made it sound like she, you know, she made like this thing, and like it made her like, you know, made her a good guy. When in reality, she's just part of the system to set up a cycle over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I still the problem with Neo and being the one. I just feel like he's not really in charge of his own agency. And maybe at the very end he is, but up until. Maybe when he goes to the Machine City, but we don't even know. Does he have control over himself?
I mean, this Neo does. All the previous Neos, no, because all the previous Neos played the game and brought everything back to a reset. Because, I mean, like, that's the thing. That's why I maintain the Matrix of the Matrix, because it's easier to recreate Zion in a computer game by hitting the reset button on your Nintendo cartridge and the game starts over than it is to physically rebuild a place. Because Holly's like, it doesn't make sense to rebuild the place. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't make sense to build it. I completely agree. It makes no sense to physically rebuild a place. That's why Matrix of the Matrix, hit the reset button, the game starts over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that makes way more sense to me. It's just the easiest explanation.
Yeah. True.
It's way less convoluted. than, like, oh, going in, the robots rebuild the place for humanity to live in.
I see a complete plausibility of a Matrix within a Matrix, but I also see that it might not. So there's other things that could be at play here, but I don't know.
I think it's way more complicated to not be a Matrix. I mean, it could be. I mean, and the Wachowski said that it wasn't a Matrix within a Matrix, which just, I mean, it's possible. It just makes it dumber. And the movie's supposed to be smart. And
well,
you know.
I don't. That's not. You know, the universe is under no obligation to make sense to you.
No.
So, and it's very true. It's not my line. It's
I think I've heard that somewhere.
Neil deGrasse Tyson says it. He says because when people talk about really complex scientific theories, they're like, well, that doesn't make sense. They're like, the universe is no obligation to make sense to you.
I just like Inception did such a good job. They went 4 or 5 Matrixes deep in Inception, and then you still didn't even know if you were out at the very end. And they did all that in one movie, and that was very smart, and I enjoyed that. And the fact that they couldn't even go 2 levels deep and commit to it, they foreshadowed it, but they never committed. So it just felt like less ballsy and less smart to do it that way.
Maybe we all missed the whole fucking point.
Maybe we did.
Maybe we did. Let's do the recap.
The point is Neo punches Smith.
That's too reductive. There's more to it than that. Do we want to do the breakdowns? And I'll try to be a little faster than normal. I mean, unless you guys want to talk about certain aspects.
Yeah, if we're moved, we'll speak up. We'll jack in.
So, this is Matrix Revolutions, and this came out October 27th, 2003. I'm sorry, that was in Walt Disney. In the United States, it was November 5th, 2003. That's when it was released throughout the public. Budget was $110 million to $150 million. It made $427.3 million, so did very well. The movie starts off again where we left off to be concluded in Matrix Reloaded, where Bane and the Bane Smith, you know, combo and Neo are both unconscious, and they are trying to figure out what happened with Neo, how he took out the Sentinels, and where his consciousness is. And we find out later that in a second that Neo is on Mobile Avenue, and this is where we get to meet the young little girl Sati, the program that they're sneaking in through the train man to be snuck into the Matrix to be safe there.
Yeah, and like they were going to delete her because she didn't, she wasn't like a productive program.
But then at the very
last scene, that beautiful sunrise, and she's in that scene, and she says, the Oracle says, "Did you do that?" And she goes, "For Neo." And it's like this rainbow sunrise. It's really pretty.
Yeah, and obviously things with no purpose sometimes can have a purpose.
Sometimes it's just joy.
Yeah, maybe. That could be it. And we have this interesting back and forth between the parents, and he's kind of coming to the wraparound that these programs are pretty much sentient, and that they have, you know, obviously they have a family, they show love. And we, as we talked before, love is just a word, but it means connection. So, at the same time, we get the Seraph contacts Morpheus, and they want them to come back into the Matrix. And this is where we go into the Merovingians club, giant rave club, and they're going to try to find a way to get Neo out of the Mobile Avenue underground train.
Right, because they already tried going after the train master, train guy?
Train man.
And they failed. So that's where they went to the club. And I thought the fight scene was pretty cool.
That was a really good scene.
They fit a rave in all three movies, but they didn't fit Trinity being a badass at the beginning of all three movies.
I was going to say, Dave, you got your cyberpunk in this one for sure.
Absolutely.
That rave, I was like, oh, this must be where Puppy Play started.
Puppy Play? You know, I have to disagree, because at the very end, when they come into the final, they get kind of what you call a Mexican standoff, when they're all holding guns to each other's heads. Mm-hmm. Trinity goes, she says, I want you to bring me the eyes. The Merovingian says, I want to bring me the eyes of the Oracle. And and Trinity goes, I don't have time for this shit. And she's like,
I loved it.
So
I mean, but I mean, the other two movies opened with Trinity being a badass.
I know, but this, you're right. It didn't open, but Trinity definitely showed her mettle right there.
Oh yeah, I'm not disagreeing. I just thought it was such a great opening that Trinity like led the movies, and then she kind of it was. I mean, she got her moment, but it was like a couple minutes in instead of
yeah.
There's another nod to fucking empowered females in the film industry. Suck it.
Suck it.
So, is that a good thing to say when you're talking about?
Probably not.
It's the best thing to say when you're talking about, because women can choose to do that if they want to and feel empowered while they do it. Don't shame them for doing if they do enjoy that. Hey, all just right, because you don't, Holly, doesn't mean other people don't enjoy that.
I know other people too. So you
different
know what?
Folks
we can say
strokes.
Suck it if we want to. Suck it.
Suck it. All right, so after that, like I said, Trinity kind
I'm
of
standing
like,
up for women here.
Are you?
Are you?
At attention.
You're disgusting.
That's actually pretty funny.
It is funny, but. Anyways. I want to know what your girlfriend's face is like.
It's sleeping.
Probably because it doesn't even understand the context of what we're talking about. So yeah. Right now. So
I'm sorry, fiance, not girlfriend.
Yes.
Anyway, so because of Trinity saying "fuck this," I don't have time for this shit, and she goes, "You're going to release Neo," and so next we have them going into the Mobile Avenue train station, and this is where they get they come in contact with Neo right there. So and they save Neo out of the train station. Because he was going to be there for a very, very long time. So after that, we have visions of Neo's getting visions of the Machine City, and he doesn't know what that means. I think he understands that he should be going to the Machine City, but he's not entirely certain. So he has to go and talk to the Oracle again.
Well, I think part of his visions are so vague, like. The visions get longer throughout the film, and then his third or fourth vision, he actually sees the city, which I'm surprised he even knew what it was.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Yeah. What the hell?
Anyway.
What the hell am I seeing?
Yeah. So he goes to the Oracle.
Yeah. So he goes to the Oracle, and he's like, you know, how did I knock out those Sentinels? How, you know, why do I have this power out? What do these visions mean?
There's a matrix within a matrix, but I won't tell you.
Well, she says that the power of the one extends outside the matrix.
Mm-hmm. The other matrix that I won't tell you about.
Well, and that's, again, that's left very vague that you can read that into it if you wanted to. So very, very easy to read that into. And at this point, she gives him some vagaries, of course, and we're not given any full answers on what's. Of Neo's questions, I guess, as best I can put it. But then when Neo leaves, we unfortunately get Smith comes and Smith takes over the Oracle and assimilates her. And then we get that great scene of Agent Smith laughing after it takes over the Oracle. So, which is, I would say, probably a pretty iconic
picture.
Makes
him look like Red Skull there or something.
Oh, my God. He looks so fucking insane how he laughs. It's like his whole face changes.
It's very strange looking.
So, okay, yeah. And then we get that Nebuchadnezzar is the crew is in the ship called the Hammer. And they find Niobe's ship. And when they find it, they find their crew and they give it a jump start basically. And so they can go together and they're trying to figure their way to go back to Zion to get, to, you know, to help them with their fight. So at this point, Neo says, I have to go to the Machine City and I need one of your ships. And they're like, fuck you.
Well, the grass is green and the girls are babies.
And,
weird.
So Niobe decides to say, you can take my ship, and that they're going to fly through. Niobe's going to take the other ship, the Hammer, and fly down some mechanical tube that only she can fly through because she's like a crackerjack pilot. So Neo and Trinity take off on Niobe's ship, the Logos, and what unknown to them that Bane, the guy who has the Smith psyche or whatever he programmed in his brain, is stowed away on the ship and to, obviously assassinate him. So, and from there, we get Niobe and flying through the mechanical tunnels, and she hits a debris, and then Sentinels are after them, and she has to make all these crazy Millennium Falcon type moves through these really tight tunnels. And it's a pretty good, pretty exciting scene.
Yes, but like it took so long.
Yeah, to get to
for them point. I think it was supposed to take them like 23 minutes or something. I think for the first time in films, you know, cinematic history, they actually made the time match.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like it was straight on.
Yes. Because, you know, there are always those films where, like, 10 seconds, and then it's, like, 3 minutes later.
Yeah, right, right.
No,
yeah.
This was, like, the opposite. It's, like, they took them, I think it was supposed to take them 16 minutes to get down, or, like, they were supposed to be just about to break through or something, and then lock bag, it was, like, what did he say, breach in 12 minutes or something, and it's, like, are they still not fucking close?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
Very, very frustrating.
Well,
wishing he would die?
Wish who would die?
Locke.
Yeah, I know. Everyone's like, would that guy just die?
Well, he's part of the Matrix and a Matrix. He's like the one who's trying to sabotage Zion.
So is he a program then?
Oh, absolutely. No.
Okay. Stop. He's not. Shut the fuck up. All right.
Hey, we don't know. It's left vague.
It's so vague.
Hey, Holly hates him, so there must be something up with him. Maybe he is a program.
He's a dick.
Well, you know, you never know.
He likes dicking Niobe.
If they're in the Matrix, and if you think that the architect has all control, then all these so-called programs are probably not actually programs. They're just like, have extra abilities in the Matrix or something. Because
I mean, I don't think he's got control over every single program in the Matrix. I just think he has control over how the Matrix resets itself. I mean, the Merovingian knows how to, like, separate themselves.
He drinks and he knows things.
He drinks and he knows things. And he knows...
Tywin Lannister. Or not Tywin.
Tyrion.
Tyrion. I guess, okay, we don't want to associate Tyrion with that douchebag, so I take it back.
Tyrion's pretty awesome. No, but, you're right. I mean, he can escape the Matrix resets. He knows how to hide them because he's got his own like side matrixes, like the train station, that are Matrix adjacent, so you can hide during the reset and then come back into the world. But I mean, the architect's in charge of the reset. He's in charge of keeping the humans in check, and the way he keeps the humans in check is just with the Matrix game.
Okay.
He creates he creates the Oracle, and they team up and they make this giant loop happen over and over and over again to keep people in check.
Right. Well, you've made your argument. Now it's for the audience to decide or to deride.
Amen.
All right. So
get on the train or stay off.
That's right. Ticket, please. All right. So on Zion. Zion, unfortunately, the diggers get through, and then we get the huge swarms of Sentinels that come into the docking area of Zion. And
the worst mechs ever come out.
Yeah, they're so open in the front. I would just think that they would. I mean, obviously, the one captain Mifune or something like that.
Oh, in their robo jocks.
Yeah, but they were just like wide open. They need protection over them.
The worst designed mechs whenever you're fighting creatures that have these really long tentacle arms. You're asking to get killed.
Yeah, you need protection, not just roll bars.
You know, speaking of the little tentacle arms, I know this is off topic, but I found myself really appreciating the design of the little tentacle arms because they match the plugins, and I only realized it at the end when they were plugged into Neo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're like little miniature ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. That's okay, cool. Sorry.
But it would be awesome if they would just run around and jack people back into the Matrix instead of killing them. That would be great. Just like scurry them around. Yeah. That would be great.
There you go.
So, yeah, so we get this whole setup. We kind of been glossing over a little bit, but, I mean, Zion is prepping for war, and then finally the war starts. And then we have a scene where Z, Link's wife or girlfriend, and wasn't clear what their relationship was, but she is kind of like an ammunition.
Oh, that girl, that chick was bad. Did anybody else think she looked like
yeah, she looks like the
Ruby Rose.
Yeah, she looks just like Ruby Rose.
Yeah, but
except she's way too
she's got a wider face. Yeah. Well, definitely, it's not her, but yeah, she looks like Ruby Rose. I was like, badass, that is so cool.
Is it Ruby Rose's older sister? They look like they could be related.
I don't know who. I'm sorry. I don't know who Ruby Rose is.
She's the new Batgirl in the CW's or Batwoman in the CW Batwoman show. She was in Orange Is the New Black.
She was in John Wick 2.
She always plays a lesbian because she is a lesbian. Like she was in.
Have you? You may not. This is kind of girly. Have you ever seen Pitch Perfect 3?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Actually, one of my high school friends is actually in that movie, so.
Oh, nice.
I always like.
Cool. Congratulations, high school friend.
Well, yeah, Bobby, you're awesome.
Are we talking about her, the actual girl shooting the missiles, Char?
Yeah.
Chara? Okay.
Sending a picture to our group so you can see her, because it looks just very similar.
They do look really, really similar. But yeah. Z and this awesome chick, one of them is like the missile launcher, and Z is going to be the one.
The clip.
Floating. Yeah. And they were super smart. I loved that they had a tactical eye. Like, is it Chara?
Chara, yeah.
Chara. She, you know, they had three goes, and she fires one, and she's like, yeah, this ain't cutting it. So they get higher. They take out one of its legs, and then the last time they hit it, they try to hit it straight down in on the drill, which would have been successful, I believe, and they accidentally, Sentinels fly in front of the missiles, and they explode, and then she dies, which sucks, but you know what? It happens.
We all gotta die somehow.
But they were awesome.
Yes,
she died from the tentacle.
And we get the whole thing during the battle. They need to open one of the gates to let the hammer through as Niobe flies through because she has an EMP to knock down all the Sentinels out.
Yeah, gone.
The radio's down, but why doesn't Zion have an EMP?
You know, it was interesting. It's interesting that you bring that up because did they only have three ships to defend Zion?
I guess.
Because the whole point of not letting the ships go, like not letting one ship go, was because they needed their whole fleet. Was their fleet three ships?
Possibly.
That's bananas.
I doubt it, but they do make it seem that way.
Yeah, like in the beginning, in the beginning of the second film, it makes it sound like there are a ton. And if you look in the room, there's a ton of pilots who do not come forward. Yeah,
you're right, Holly.
Yeah, but then it's just three ships. Like, I mean, why send the only ships with the EMPs out? Like, are you fucking stupid?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it seemed like there at least was 10 ships.
Mm-hmm.
There was like 50 people in that room.
I know, but I figure it was her crew as well. But yeah. I mean, I figured at least 10, maybe 20. I doubt it'd be
and
more.
And that's not including the Nebuchadnezzar.
Right.
Because they were already gone.
They were gone. That doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. But you're right. Yeah, the city should have had, first of all, the city should have had a kind of defense mechanism. And you know what they could have done, because they had this huge dome? They could have set up a barrier of EMP and been able to just, boom, set it off right before they breach it.
Yeah, like put them on the outside, around the city, around all the major entrances.
But I also want to say, before I forget, Locke knew that it was the hammer coming, and he did not shut down the city. He knew, and he allowed that to happen, and then he blamed them for setting off the EMP.
I know, he was
such him. I fucking hate him. He's a douchebag.
I know, he's so conflicted. He's like, oh, because you guys can't think five steps ahead, you know, and you put off that EMP, we can't run anything anymore. Like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, fuck him.
So we get the whole sequence where the captain and his mech, he gets torn apart, and that young plucky kid that we met in last movie, he takes over, and I'm 18. You're more like 16.
You're right.
I'm 16.
Don't fuck up, or
no,
I'll...
I think he said he was 20 or 21, and he's like, I would have believed you if you said you were 18, and he's like, I'm 18, and he's like, oh, wait. Does he say
16? It's at the end
that
he says I'm 16.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, I'm 16. But anyway. He goes, the machines don't care what age I'm at, you know. So, but
maybe if he offers the machine some death sticks. Maybe that'll help.
But the hammer, he blows open the gate, counterweights this young kid, and so the hammer can get in, and it fires off its EMP.
And Z's there.
Z's there, and the Sentinels all go crashing down, and so that kind of knocks them out. Now, they know there's going to be another wave, and they even mention this in the very beginning when they're plotting about how they're going to strategize against the machines. They said if they're smart, which they probably do, they'll have different waves attacking us. They know that we'll put off an EMP, and then they'll bring more down, so... Anyways, so at this point, they have like a little reprieve from the battle, and Zion, as the crew of the hammer come out, and they all start, they bring all the people back into one of the caves where they had the giant rave scene in the last movie, and to be protected because there was a bottleneck that there's only so many of the machines can get through. And during that time, that's when they're setting up, that's when the machines start coming in, and that's they're going to attack again. But going back to Neo, we have this Neo's flying to the Machine City. He runs into some interference, obviously with the Smith Bane type character. Mm-hmm. He attacks them. He gets Trinity.
I think in sequence. Mm-hmm. He's attacked before the actual breach of Zion.
So anyways, Trinity is kind of used as bait to get Neo to
check his fuses and
put it down his gun, and he throws Trinity down a manhole and shuts that door, and that's it. They have a fight, and this is where he blinds Neo with a conduit.
Right.
Neo becomes blind, and this is where we see Neo can see that Bane is actually Smith, finally.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at that point, he does take out Smith, kill Smith. Looks like he rips his head off, but hard to tell because we're only seeing what Neo
the
sees.
The Matrix code that Neo sees.
Right.
I think he punches him. And it probably broke his neck or something, and that like disconnected the like.
Well, he hits
whatever connection, and then the code dissolved. Yeah, so the code like dissolved, disintegrated.
Right, right. Yeah. So at that point, obviously, Neo is blind. Trinity has to.
And then they say, "Love is blind."
And
God is love, and Neo is Matrix God.
Oh man, I don't even know where you're going with it. But he does tell Trinity
Jesus.
Matrix Jesus. He did tell Trinity that she has to drive now. So
it was funny. I liked the little bit of humor there.
Yes, I see what you did there.
You need to drive.
I see what you did there.
But did he see?
In fact, he does help her because during the point where they're flying through into the Machine City, these defense giant robots come in online, and he can kind of see what they're doing. He can stop what they're firing at them through his the one power, and the Sentinels come up to attack them, and they can't quite he can't stop them. It's too much for him, so he says go over them. So this is where Trinity flies up over the clouds, and she sees the sunlight probably for the first time in her life, and then comes back down, and they're into the Machine City, but unfortunately they're descending it too fast, and she has to like restart the engines, and finally it kicks on, but unfortunately it's too late, and they crash into the building. And when Neo wakes up and finds Trinity, she is impaled with a zillion pieces of rebar.
I think Neo was awake. I think he directed her to crash into that spot purposefully.
Like, please crash into that those
like,
rebars.
Like, well, not the rebars, but he was talking about that. He's like there, and then they ended up crashing. So I don't know. I think that was the right building, but obviously not the right landing practice.
He didn't know that was going to happen. So unfortunately,
she dies. Stuck through with three long pieces of rebar.
Yeah,
I just feel like it's kind of ironic that she dies like the day after he saved her from dying. It's just to me, it's just like, oh, he just can't escape the fate that the Matrix is making for him.
I kind of felt this. In some ways, like, you know, death's a death, and it's hard, you know, things happen, but I kind of felt Trinity got shortchanged on that one.
She did. Like, he just saved her from dying, like, the day before.
It's not even that. It's just, like, that's such a shitty way for a character like that to die, you know, but
I think she went out in a very peaceful and,
well, not peaceful,
intimate.
Do you want to die with 30 pieces of rebar? Yeah, that doesn't sound very peaceful.
Okay, so the way they set the scene, it was not. She wasn't there screaming in agony. She was very. It was very intimate. That she was very coherent. She was. Considering the amount of pain she should have been in. She shouldn't have been able to talk.
Well, you know what I like about you, Holly? I think I figured out. When we talk about the Tuvix character and have much respect for people with composure. When people lose their composure, you are like, get the fuck out of my world.
How can you stand me, Holly?
I don't know. I mean, I honestly, Dave, I've never seen you totally lose your composure. You do weird shit, but
So that's different than losing my composure. That's fine then.
Yeah. I mean, to the end of with Tuvix is when he starts like, hey, you can't kill me. Come on, people. You know you're doing the wrong thing. Kelly was like, get this guy fucking out of here.
I'll let you lick it.
Well, anyways, yes, her death was dignified, but I just kind of felt that she should have gone out with a blaze of glory, and unfortunately she got just, you know, impaled.
Yeah, you know? That does suck. That really does. But I think that if she had died in a way that she wasn't able to say goodbye, that would have been worse for both characters.
True. That's a good point. Yeah, if she just was stone dead by the time it came to her. You know, that would have sucked and be like, oh, she's dead.
Yeah.
So at that point, after we have that goodbye between Trinity and Neo, Neo makes his way into the Machine City. And this is where he's contacted by, I don't know what to explain it. It's a giant starfish with a baby face.
Yeah, it was kind of like
it'd be the architect's face, you know, like manifested through the Matrix.
Honestly, it doesn't even have to be. It could just be a mouthpiece of whatever is talking to him. It doesn't even. I don't even know
or if it's sound waves.
Yes.
Ripples.
Yes. It could be anything. We don't even know what it is. You know, it's just a machine talking to him. So Neo says that he he'll go into the Matrix and get rid of Smith, and by doing this, that they won't destroy Zion.
It will damage neither worlds.
Right, right, and that they'll have a peace between the two, and they agree, and so those. Like you said, those tentacles come up through the floor somehow and jack him into the Matrix. And once again, we see Neo.
Showdown with Smith.
Yes, on a rainy, very rainy Seattle street. And the rain actually was quite annoying me through this whole thing. It's like, God, that's so much fucking rain.
I was thinking the same. Like, I love to be in the rain, but can you imagine being that actor, like having to talk, and you've got stage water running into your mouth and into your eyes and your ears, and you're just like miserable and pissed off. I mean, I guess that helps with a fight scene.
I guess, but I can't imagine it was comfortable, and I'm sure they were freezing their ass off after a while. You know, that's just a long time to be, you know, being sprayed with water.
Yeah.
So we have a huge showdown, like you said, with Smith and Neo. And after a huge fight scene, we see that Smith had pretty much looked like he was defeated Neo, and he puts his hand into Neo's chest, and he was going to, you know, take him over, and then this is when Neo turns into Smith.
Yeah.
And then Neo just starts
vibrating, and his eyes glow.
And bursts out of it.
He becomes the antivirus to Smith's virus.
Yeah, but
you never see his face again.
Yeah, you don't, actually. That's true. He kind of disappears right after that.
Yeah, and then you see all the other Smiths glowing in the eyes and vibrating, and then the Oracle's body is left over from the one that fought Neo. So
the curse is lifted.
Is lifted. But then you know, Neo doesn't even wake up in his body. He's just back with Babyface, and he's
Babyface.
And Babyface kind of takes the platform that Neo's in, and they fly away together, and that's the fucking Matrix.
It carts him back to the code, so he can be introduced back in the code, so they can restart the Matrix again if the piece falls through.
Well, and then
that didn't happen.
And then we see him carted away. That's all we know. But we do see that Zion, obviously, there when they see that the machines aren't attacking, the little kid goes, "Hey, we won!" And he's like, "Yeah, you don't know that."
That sticks for everybody.
You don't know that. Why are you getting people all worked up? But anyways, they did win, and then we get the last interaction between the architect and the Oracle, and you know the architect says, "You played a dangerous game," and Oracle says that she knew what she was, what the risk was, and it was worth taking. And this is where a point I get confused. He says, "And they'll, you know, the human. If anybody wants to be unplugged by the human Matrix, will they be freed?" And he said, "Yeah." He says, "You have my word." And the architect says, "What do you think? I'm human." So
I think the reason why you're confused is because of the verbiage was not humans. It was those who wish to leave. And he's like, they can leave. So that doesn't specify human. That doesn't specify program.
Right.
So I think that's why it's confusing.
It is.
Because I, too, was like, okay, is she, you know, an advocate for humanity, or is she an advocate for all? Like, what?
Right, right.
Do you want?
Well, the Oracle is supposed to mean free will and choice. So, I mean, that might be something more to it. Maybe she is advocate to all. But, so that is the end of the movie. And we get, obviously, we know the fate of Zion. We know the fate of most of the crews that have survived and everyone who survived at the battle. We don't know the fate of Neo. We assume he died, but we don't really know. So, right. There's a lot to be said. I mean, I don't know.
He could have sacrificed himself in order. Like, that could have been a bargaining chip for him to go in. But I think I think he's alive, but I think he left alive. Let's say that.
It seemed like he was dead, but I don't know.
It seemed like he was dead, but we don't know. I mean, it's a movie, so it's like if you don't see him actually, like, you know, incinerated or stabbed through the heart, very difficult to know. And I just assumed he died, but I mean, with movies, who the hell knows?
Who the hell knows? The Oracle knows. Let's go see her.
Let's go see the Oracle. So we got a lot to kind of like figure out for that. And what to think about. There's one thing I want to get into. We talked about the Smith and the Neo fight at the end, mm-hmm. Neo at some point says, because Smith is goading him, saying like, why do you keep persisting? Why do you keep going? What is it? You know, is it love? Is it, you know, peace or all these things? What are you going after? And he goes, because I choose to. And then at the end, he says it was inevitable. So the two things don't coincide.
He's Thanos.
So, I think when he said it was inevitable, that was from like. The Oracle continue, you know, the Oracle told both of them everything with a beginning has an ending. So I think that's what he was referring to as it was inevitable because every beginning has an ending. But he still chose. But I thought that was really poorly done. I thought he should have had a reason because choosing is not a reason. Choosing is the action. The reason is behind the choice. And that didn't fulfill anything. Nope. By saying because I choose to.
I would like to take a minute to talk about free will. Okay. There's a lot to discuss about that. I mean, I think we all, so there's the idea of determinism and fatalism and
predestination.
Predestination, I guess that would be part of it in some ways, but the idea that is free will an illusion to us? So, I mean, some people don't believe that, and some people do. The idea that if free will is an illusion, that we are not the author of ourselves. You know, we are born into this world, and we are given the world we're brought up in. So our parents teach us certain things, our schools, our society, and even our friends and peers. We learn certain things, and we get all these influences that kind of mold us into a certain ways. So we get whatever our genes give us and the totality of our experience. And they kind of make us, as the Merovingian was talking it, and I think even the Oracle is talking it too, is cause and effect. So we have causes that push us into certain directions, and then the effects of what happens is like a domino thing. So our choices predetermined in certain ways because this is who we are, and there was never another choice that we could make. And that's the difficult thing about right there that we I think these three movies are actually talking about more than anything is free will, like love, which is kind of like a wild card in the movie. Like he goes for Trinity instead of saving Zion. Free will is that something that it's that wild card of love, or is it actually everything's predetermined? And we actually, because of those factors, our story is already written without us knowing.
I don't think our story is written without us knowing. Some reasons would be, you know, I guess it doesn't matter. But, you know, for instance, I know a particular person who his parents were not together and father wasn't a good example. Mm-hmm. And the things that he learned were that he doesn't like snakes and he's not going to treat women like shit. Those are things that he learned because of that experience, but he's going to choose to live differently because of other experiences with this person. So it's like, you know, you do have, you know, certain situations. You're, you know, you grew up in a culture that, you know, uses their hand to wipe their asses. And that's normal for that culture. And it's not normal for other cultures, but it's normal for yours. You don't know any different. So that's going to be predetermined by where you live.
Sure.
But you're not going to automatically want to stay in that culture. You might decide you want to leave. And there are so many other things that could influence your desire to go explore the world, learn new cultures. But yeah, I don't think. I think we do have free will. And yes, our experiences mold us, especially since I grew up with a ton of anxiety and I live with it, but I haven't made anxiety my bitch. I wasn't going to say that I made anxiety my bitch. That's kind of a lie. that's a little bit of the Jameson talking.
Right.
but, you know, the choice is there. You have the choice to speed. My husband's not predetermined to speeding more than I am. We just choose to follow different laws.
Yeah, but I mean, your husband and anybody else, you know, could be at that moment they feel like, you know, oh, I'm late for to work or late for an event, and you choose to speed at that very moment where you maybe normally wouldn't, or maybe you make a risky behavior driving that you normally wouldn't because you're under pressure, mm-hmm. And we all, you know, are guilty of something of that at certain points in our lives. We've done something maybe that wasn't the best idea because we were, outside influences were making us, or at least we felt it at that moment. You know, in retrospect, you might be like, hey, why did I get all worked up about that? You know, but we make these choices, and we're drawing from all of our experience, our totality of our experiences, to make a choice that might have already been shown to us, either by our, you know, who we are as a person, or who we are we've seen with the people around us. You know,
yeah.
I don't know.
So are you? I don't know. Are you insinuating that that would mean that your choices are
predetermined in some ways? I mean, not
it kind of sounds like you're posing that question. So, like, if you make choices based on what you think others expect, is that what you mean by your lack of free will?
No.
Because
no, I just meant that they influence you, they guided you. You know, obviously, you know, the voices of the people that have told you things in your past, whatever they may be, you know, and it could just even be moments in your life that you remember something and you're drawing that from that memory of the moment when, you know, your father showed some kind of indignation to something that was said to him or to his family. And you remember, like, oh, I don't want, you know, I would never let that happen. Just like Dad didn't, you know, just little things like that. They might not be like fresh in your mind, but that said something to you, that taught you something at that very moment. And who knows what that might do in the future, but that has given you that code in your life, whatever that is.
Nobody calls me chicken.
Nobody calls me No, but and the other thing is, like you were saying before, like there are certain people that totally reject their past, and maybe they're always struggling to reject what they knew from their past because they knew that was not the right thing, whatever they saw, what they experienced at that point. And that's very much true too, but that might be also showing what they have, their determinism is, or whatever that's deep within them, gene-wise or whatever, is showing them they do not want to carry on the same road that maybe their parents took or the society around them is taking. They're like, I can't take this. Like certain people are living in a small town, America, and they're like, I want to go to New York City, or I want to go to LA to become an actor or whatever, you know, like they need to break out of that small town. And that's what they push themselves to go to Broadway or wherever, mm-hmm. you know, or like you said, somebody's in some country that's not a very good place to live. And they're like, I need to get the fuck out of here.
Right.
You know, and, there's tons of examples of that as well. So, I don't know. I do think determinism and fatalism, which says that our free will is not as free as we think it is, does have some credence to it. I don't know if I totally buy into it, but
I mean, it's interesting. I grew up Presbyterian, and you know, still I had been, I guess go to a non-denominational church technically now, but like growing up, we were always taught in predestination, but we're also taught that we had free will, which like go at odds seemingly on the surface. And right. like, and it's like, I mean, because, you know, when you believe, that God is sovereign and knows everything and everything is predestined because he knows everything. So it's gotta be predestined. But at the same point, you also have choice to an extent, I guess, in your situation, even though it's been predetermined. It's really weird.
I've had
cigar nights with church people talking about the metaphysics of like what is free will.
But why would Adam take the apple from Eve or why would even God give him that temptation if he knew that was already going to happen? Or did he know that the fall of man through sin was always going to happen and it had to play out that way? And if that was the case, you know, why even start that whole thing anyways? I mean, there's so many like questions, like, and I don't want to get into a whole, you know, theological debate over that. I mean, it's the point of, you know, if things are predetermined,
it's a mind-bender.
It is. Yeah.
I don't think things are predetermined. Well, some things are, if you have faith that there is a God and that Christ will come again and, you know, the select few will go off and that there will be a war for, I think it's what, 7 years. But
I'm gonna get it on.
Yeah. Some of that is predetermined, but I, you know, maybe it is known. The path is known, but I don't think that means that it's predetermined. Does that make sense?
That's the thing, is that that argument never made sense to me from day one. So it either is predetermined or it is not predetermined.
And so getting to the ending, like the ending could be determined by something completely unrelated to anything that's happening on planet Earth right now. Right? So
yes.
Getting to that point could all be undetermined. If it's predetermined, and then yeah, there's no free will. But you know,
that's the part that never shook out in my head long enough. I mean, I am not the wisest man that ever lived. It's something I've grappled with too. So like I said, if we do not have free will, and like I said, if we are the summation of our influences and what our genes are give us in this world to, you know, maybe free will is the illusion that those choices we make, but they are not really that much of a free, you know, like these are not that it's, when I say it's already written, I don't really mean that. I just mean that it's kind of like, you never really had a choice. You know, maybe you turn
like manipulation, left. Maybe.
Yes. Like you, okay. Yes, sort of like that.
It's like a product of your what you're saying. It's like it's just a product of how you were raised and your
take a young kid from an inner city that never had a good father figure, always saw people like maybe dealing drugs, and they're revered as, you know, like the hot shit in the neighborhood, and you don't, other than maybe TV, you don't get to see anything else in a society.
Some of them turn to become businessmen, and some of them become gangsters, and it's just like, okay, how did that happen?
Exactly. And some people decide to get out and some people don't. But it's like, you cannot necessarily blame a young kid for having the wrong perceptions of what's good in life, if that's all that kid sees.
Yeah.
And it's not that you might say, hey, that road you're going to go down is not going to do you any good, you know, and maybe even he or she may know that, but this is all they know. This is all they've seen. And that's not necessarily it's not necessarily their fault if they decide to go down that road. But it would have been nice if somebody else showed them a different way of living. And and that's a hard thing to do, because if your formative years, if that's all you see, and it could mean anything, like you said, Holly, like somebody's living in a world where, you know, you wipe your hand with you wipe your ass with your hand, you know, that kind of thing. That's all you know, and you live in technically what would be maybe the Iron Age of, you know, like or something, or you know, that kind of like time where like there's not a lot of technology around you to even have indoor plumbing or toilet paper, so. It's a weird fucking thing. It's like, how would you see outside that world?
Yeah.
And you can't blame people for not seeing outside that world. Only a few people have enough maybe dream or drive to get themselves out of that.
Gumption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a difficult, but so that's the one thing I want to talk about, free will. So free will is a very hairy subject that is very difficult to
quantify and explain or prove.
Right, exactly.
I don't know, though.
You sent us a super depressing video.
I actually did not click on it.
Oh, come on, Holly.
I wanted to watch it after this discussion. I didn't want my thoughts sullied by else's thoughts.
It's not necessarily just about the Matrix. It's about the it's a book that's
the Matrix as a reference to explain what's happening in the ideas in this book, even though it's not direct correlation per se.
So it's the book is Simulacra and Simulation, and it's by Jean Baudrillard. Sorry, it's a French name. And it's referenced in the first movie. You see the book itself. Neo has it when he opens up the book, and it has all those like hacks that he gave to those raver kids. Mm. So that's when we see that first. But the idea is that symbols today are less and less meaningful. They are copies of copies of copies that the media feeds us. So the media is feeding us symbols. If it's
media and products, like companies, feed us.
Right? And what we're talking about here is because more and more of our civilization or society is becoming, how should we put it, slowly changing to be more insular, and we only see certain parts of our lives. Like it actually. Thinking about it, I think we're almost his whole idea is right upon us almost about now. But the idea that certain people have certain worldviews and that's all they see. And the person next to you has a completely different worldview and that's all they see. And all these different things are not shared within each other. And we become fragmented as a society.
Because you are what you buy, and what you buy, quote unquote, defines you. And some people actually live that way.
Absolutely. Well,
many people probably live that way. And it's horribly shocking to kind of like have that fed to you and realize it. And it's kind of like Cypher. Like you kind of want to just be plugged back in the Matrix and not realize that this is the world. Like,
right.
Because, I mean, we are all living in the real world, and, like, you know, it's how it is. But then, I mean, it's sort of manufactured, and explaining how the world is manufactured that we live in and realizing it's sort of depressing. I was like, oh, wow. Philosophy sucks.
And we're all kind of guilty of it in our own way, you know?
Sure, but some people embody it completely.
Well, I mean, it's like you walk in with a T-shirt that has, like, a geek reference that only maybe 10 to 15% of people would get, yeah. You know, I mean, it's obviously you know, one of those things that are that it kind of represents who you are. And anyways, it's very interesting. It's all turning
into Idiocracy, and we've got to do Idiocracy later on. I feel like the Matrix, and then this video sent us is like a perfect tie-in to Idiocracy at some point.
That's actually kind of funny. Yeah, it kind of works into that. But it's the idea that our values are formed by the media around us instead of institutions, because institutions have completely changed.
Yeah, institutions are backgrounds now. They're sort of barely relevant in the culture. The culture is the product now. Like that's how Idiocracy is. It's all about the product and like how you can represent it. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Yeah, and he brought up the one thing was really interesting was the idea of that you could kind of put it with the Matrix, where everyone's in their little tubes, in the simulation of the Matrix, but we're almost like on a highway and we're all going certain places, but we're all encapsulated in our cars, and we don't know what that person to the left, the right of us, in front or back of us, what their world is like. We are totally unaware. And we're only aware of our world, and we're not sharing the same reality together.
Well, the sad reality of our time is that is partly true, and the other part of it is that nobody fucking cares what their neighbor feels or thinks.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's part of it.
If any of my friends listen to this podcast, probably not. But, I'm always going on Facebook and deleting shit because it's like people are intolerant of those who don't have the similar views as them. And it's like, you know, I don't want to delete them because we have different views, but it's their intolerance and their indifference to others that really, I'm just like, I don't want anything to do with you fucking people. Like, who are you people?
Who are you people? No, but, it's part of it is that we become, and the idea that we all have certain information through media that, that usually confirms our belief system. So you can go to, you know, a certain news source that, you know, agrees with your types of learning or belief system. And the person next, you can go to a totally different news source and teach them something else. So we can't even agree on the same set of facts anymore, which is difficult. So, I mean, the idea that the media is driving our reality that video talked about the really interesting. I thought it was interesting how Baudrillard wrote these articles during the first Gulf War, saying that the Gulf War wasn't happening. And basically
it wasn't going to happen. The Gulf War isn't happening, and the Gulf War didn't happen.
And his mind, and what it meant was not that it didn't physically happen, is that we were all seeing the Gulf War through our television sets. And it had no meaning to us whatsoever, to the people on the ground and all the reasons why it was happening. We had, you know, the common person watching it on their news station, you know, seeing the feeds of whatever was given to us by, the reporters. We don't have any true connection to it. We are only given. And if you're only paying attention slightly through your life, which, you know, most people who aren't in that situation are only picking up like the parts that are being reported.
Yeah.
And who knows how those stories are actually what's true and what's not.
Yeah.
So that was another very interesting part. So, I mean, it's the idea that not so much that the idea of the simulation that Baudrillard was trying to talk about isn't necessarily the Wachowskis took it to a point of like science fiction, like you're in a like a Matrix simulation that's not real. But his idea was, you know, we are living in this like these bubbles where we're only being told certain things of who we are and how to be.
And that reality is getting watered down more and more because people see things on TV and they want to imitate it. And,
yeah, we see a commercial or something like that.
And because we want to be that. And then we go out and do that and be that. And it's not the same as it was how it was presented. And then we keep living our lives like that way. And then the media starts imitating life. And our life is an imitation of the previous media. And everything gets watered down more and more and more because everything is a copy of a copy of a copy. And nothing is truly true anymore. I mean, not nothing, but many things aren't truly true anymore. Like, life isn't lived normally. Life is, a lot of people, like, live through, vicariously through other people to the form of flattery or just imitation. And that imitation of an imitation of imitation is what's kind of watering down life. And it's sort of like, it's sort of true to an extent. And it is very true.
It's
frightening.
It is a little frightening because you're just like, yeah, I mean, like, and it's not like anyone's like guilty of anything. I mean, some people are worse than others, obviously, you know, like you get people who like want to copy things like, you know, whatever the Kardashians are wearing or whoever the newest trend is. Right. But it's just that we're all guilty of it somehow. We see something in a magazine, we see something online, we see a movie, and we want our lives to replicate that in some way or form. You know, it's human nature. You know, there's certain things we see like, oh, I would love my life to be like that.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting, but anyways, interesting to look into. I would suggest, looking into it if you get a chance.
it sounds fascinating.
It's fascinating and utterly depressing.
It sounds like there are mirrored things in our current situation in this country. But you guys know I don't like to get political, so I'm saying nothing.
we don't even have to talk about politics. We're just talking about society in general.
Yeah, just society and life in general. Yeah,
and I think we've come to this point where it is this like you said, a copy of a copy of a copy. So we get this like hyper reality that's not really true. Yeah.
Well, I watch the news. I don't like read other things, so.
It doesn't.
My mind goes to politics.
Yeah. No, I mean, but just.
Why have you forsaken?
Jesus.
I commit my spirit.
Anyways,
bring it to full circle because the movie actually did like bring back lots of callbacks to the first Matrix.
It did.
Especially in the fight scenes. Trinity did some of her moves. They did a fight scene in the room with a bunch of pillars that exploded. Lots of callbacks to the first movie. So I'm making a callback to her first episode in my song.
Sure, why not?
System of a Down.
Okay, I get it now. See, your cadence was off, and I was like, what the fuck is he talking about?
The System of a Down song from the first...
Yeah, now I remember, because you had to spell it out for me.
And anyone else who didn't get my reference. So I just wanted to make sure. I don't want to, like, I want to clue everyone in.
It's inclusive.
We're an inclusive podcast.
Inclusive podcast. So
inclusive if you've seen the material we're talking about.
Right, right.
otherwise, you're shit out of
luck. Otherwise, buckle up and have fun.
Yeah, it's going to get weird from here.
It's going to get bumpy like my hemorrhoids.
Oh, no. So... is there anything? Other than this movie, actually, Revolutions. I think all the previous two movies give us a lot of philosophy to mine. You know, if we are talking about fatalism, determinism, utilitarianism, all that stuff. I mean, There's tons of stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. Free will. There's lots of things to grapple with. But this movie didn't give it to us that as much.
It dropped the ball. I mean, the threads continued, but with no further development.
Yeah, yeah. Is there anything else we want to talk about this movie? I mean, those are the kind of things I want to just hit on right now.
Just to kind of respond to what you just said, you know, I just wanted to say that these films don't make me question life. I just find them entertaining. You know, I get that they pose philosophical questions and things, but for me, I genuinely just enjoy them as entertainment.
Well, Holly, you've got a unique perspective of you've just been, you saw the first movie as it came out, but apparently you blocked it all from your mind.
And so
you've got this fresh view on The Matrix, and you watched it 2 weeks ago, the second one a week ago, and this one this week. You've got a completely different perspective on it. You can probably only watch it for the entertainment value, whereas Aaron and I, we saw them in the movie theaters. We had friends that nerded out and talked about them. Anticipation for the next movie, theorizing. Like, we had all this, like, build-up. And that's where a lot of my disappointment lies. It just usually you just get excited and you think it's going to be this big old thing and then it's not. Whereas, like, you know, also people in my church, you know, like I was saying earlier, Predestination versus, you know, Free Will, this came up a lot anyway in our church. Came up even more after The Matrix came out. Lots of all the philosophy, like, you know, and just being taught to think about things more deeply at home and stuff like that. Family conversations, church conversations, outside of church conversations, all this kind of stuff kind of happened. So, like, I did think about this, and I'm sure something similar for Aaron, like, you know, where he had friends that talked about it, and, like, you know, it was popular, so some people obsessed about it. Yeah. And you're not seeing it through that.
We all come from religious backgrounds, but this was never something I ever considered as, like, I never even thought of it that, like, oh, wow, does this relate to my life?
I mean, see, sure. I just think you may just not have been in a situation for it, too.
Maybe. You might be right.
Because you've been watching it just over the last 3 weeks, and I know you said you saw it way back when, but don't remember any of it, so you probably didn't have those discussions that Aaron and I did around the times the movies came out.
You've met my mom. We've discussed a lot of things.
I'm not saying
if I watched this with my parents, then my parents would have been like, "Do you guys want to discuss this?" Like,
well, sure, but maybe you didn't. I don't know.
It's funny because it wasn't your mom who said that you were the one who always wanted to discuss the things, and they were like, "Well, I guess so."
Yeah.
You were the one saying, we need to talk about this right now.
Right,
so Holly,
yeah.
Is are you in the Matrix? Is your reality not how it's been portrayed?
What you don't know is that I'm the architect.
Ooh. Oh. Can I have a really good paying job?
Can I too, Holly, please? Can you set that up for me? I won't make any more squirting jokes about you if you do that for me.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, then we might have to make something happen. Yeah, I'll see what I can do. You know, there's some bots on the run, or, you know, they're causing mischief and shit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll pull up my Doomsday Machine fleshlight from the website.
You know, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about what would be a great commercial is Decker going into it and that look on his face and the music. That would be so funny.
We should cut that together. That'd be hilarious. Fleshlight.
Fleshlight, I know. It's fun.
Y'all are bad.
I like how Natalie got on there. Where's the women's one? Then I'm like, oh, I just turned it around.
Oh, Jesus.
Ew.
She's like, I thought it'd be inventive. And then I got her the Spocker picture of Spock. You know, if shocking her doesn't work, try the Spocker. And then she's like, oh, come on. And then I got her a picture of Captain Kirk's dildo.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I got that type. From what little girls are made of. Yeah, so anyways, so Holly, you do not believe we are in a Matrix?
No, I don't.
I do.
I live with far too much anxiety for us to not be the real thing, and I will fuck somebody up if that's the case.
There's some interesting writings on if we, in all seriousness, if we are in a Matrix type simulation.
Oh yeah, they're trying to figure it out.
There's lots of things out there. People saying that maybe what was it? There are certain people who believe that it's possible we're just a test, you know, for society or maybe some technology or something to that nature, and we are just here to test it out and see what happens.
I've seen a glitch in the Matrix.
You have?
Yes, I was driving my car at night, and
you had deja vu.
No, I saw deja vu. I saw, like, for me, like, I see light posts go out a lot. I mean, I don't know how often people see light posts go out. I see them go out an awful lot. Like,
you work at night, David.
Yeah, I know, but I see them turn. I feel like I drive up to them and they turn off. Mm-hmm. All the time. I feel like it happens to me extraordinarily. I mean, maybe it just happens to a lot of people. I don't know. But I've gone through them, and I saw the light click off, and I could still see the light off, but the cone of light was still on the ground. And I drove through it. It was the weirdest thing. It was like I saw it off, but the cone of light, like it was like in video games, usually, and older ones, I mean, I know they do the better thing with lighting, but there's like separate objects that create light. There's like the actual light, there's a cone of light that makes it look like there's a cone of light, and then there's like the spotlight. There's like a couple different things that build up light in a video game. And it was like, I saw the light was off at the source, but the light was still sort of there. It was bizarre.
That is bizarre.
Maybe you were drinking, tired. I was driving home from work.
Yeah, maybe you were tired.
Sometimes maybe the light was coming from something else.
Maybe, but it seemed like it was coming from that angle. It looked like it was specifically still the light from the source, but it was off. It was weird.
There is a great paper you can look at completely up on the internet. It's totally free. It's by Nick Bostrom, and it's called "Are You Living in a Computer Simulation?" And he goes through the whole thing of reasons why we could be living in a computer simulation. So we could be like Moriarty in that Next Generation episode where, you know, he's just living in a simulation his whole life. And there's certain reasons why we can only do certain things and we can't do certain things. So it's interesting.
Maybe that's why we can't move faster than the speed of light. They just haven't programmed it into our reality yet.
That's one of his arguments, is that, you know, with the Fermi paradox, how people say, well, where's all the alien life? If we're surrounded by all these planets, why aren't we seeing alien signals? And one of the things is like, maybe, you know,
that's... haven't coded in yet.
They haven't been coded in. And the reason why we can't leave the planet, because we can't go past the speed of light. And so it kind of just limits us to our planet and our solar system for now. So anyways, it's interesting if you get a chance to go into that. And also just going for, and not to get Holly riled up, but for if we are living in a computer simulation or a simulation that's a lie, there's the idea of Rene Descartes said, he was famous for saying that I think therefore I am. That was the idea, and it seemed like such a silly thing to say. But what he was pointing out at the certain point is, he gave the idea of like, what if somebody is controlling my world? Like, what if my brain is in a vat somewhere, I think he said it was like a demon that is like basically tricking my world everywhere I go. You know, and everything I see is a lie. And what if that's the case? And so he says you have to question everything, all your beliefs, every belief. And if something does not hold up with under certain scrutiny, you have to throw away that belief and rethink your belief system. And so that was the only thing is there. The think therefore I am is the idea is that you need to have rigorous doubt and thorough examinations of your belief systems and the world around you, which is frankly exhausting. So
never sleep again.
I know. He's the like, movie, is this bed real? I don't know. Should I?
Anyways. I'm just going to eat the whole bag of cookies because none of this is fucking real.
None of it's real. Calories are an illusion. Yes.
I believe that. But anyways, these are all things to look into if you really want to. They're just interesting. They're interesting ways to kind of like toy with the idea of what's real, what's not. And that kind of thing. So it's interesting.
This is a very heavy episode of Sub the Hall.
I'm going to shut the fuck up now.
No, it was great. I really like getting into heavy things. And I feel like Star Trek hasn't presented that to us in a long time, especially with Discovery. So it's nice that we get to something heady and like into a deep discussion. And I
wanted to get into some of the stuff now because the other two movies were a lot to talk about. This one, It really wasn't much.
Not as much, so we could, like, get into it. I didn't want to get too much into it on the first movie because it's hard to get into some of the philosophy stuff and choice and free will without seeing the second movie, because the second movie is so much about, you know, choice and control.
Sure,
the perception of it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, I may not be around for a couple weeks or many weeks. I don't know how it's going to go out. So if you don't hear my voice for a while, I'll see you later.
Nice knowing you.
Just for the listeners out there who don't know the situation, yeah, I've got a new job, and it looks like I'm working on a lot of Sundays. So we're working on rearranging stuff, but you may not hear from me for a little bit while we work on that.
True enough.
Cool. But I do want to do Idiocracy sometime when we get back. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Absolutely. All right, man. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, let's do it. Our music is provided by Warp 11, except for the intro. That's provided by our friends Dave Wilkes. Warp 11, you can find online at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show you can find online at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. You can follow the Facebook discussion at facebook.com/groups/syntholics, where you can find out all our Fleshlight, the Doomsday Machine ads and all that fun stuff that we put up. On Twitter, you can find the show at Syntholic Duo. Personally, I'm at David_Jan_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. And Holly's at Lunar Thistle.
And please go to Apple iTunes, rate and view us. Also, please realize that if we are most definitely living in a simulation, if you go into Patreon.com/Syntholics, and give us money, you won't really know it because money isn't real. So you can just give us the money. So it's fine. You know,
it would be great to get paid to do this.
Yes. And David wouldn't have crazy work schedules. Also, if you could, please let your other simulated friends know about our podcast. That's a great way to share the show and support the show. You know, sharing the social media on Facebook, on Twitter, Reddit, any of those things are great just to let people know that we're out there and people can tune into us and listen to what we have to say about simulations and the media perverting symbols to point of meaninglessness.
You know what's hilarious? We never actually said our real names at the beginning of the show. So if this is anyone's first episode, they're going to be so confused.
I was listening to a show with dish detergent, washing machine, and spork.
And they talked about utensils for 15 minutes. And I turned it off because it didn't seem like it was about the Matrix.
I'm David. I'm Holly.
I'm Aaron O'Brien.
Welcome to the Matrix.
Yeah, welcome to the Matrix.
We're all fucked up. My butt's on backwards.
We got Tuvixed all over again. They split us apart in the transporter, but somehow.
I'm like Mel Brooks in Spaceballs, and my butt got beamed on backwards.
And you've got boobs. It's great.
All right.
Well, thank you for listening. Question everything, especially when you're in the Matrix. If you hear anything from Doomcock and Midnight's Edge, question everything.
Even
Sit
more
the Holics
so.
Out. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
The Holics out.
Oh, nice.
We've jacked off once again. That's great.
Oh, jeez.
And in true Syntholics fashion, I've actually got a new job. It's a part-time job at a liquor store that I'm going to at 10 o'clock tomorrow.
What is going on?
I don't know what's going on. It's weird. I can't hear myself, so.
Really?
It's kind of weird.
But you can hear your voice when you speak, right?
No, I'm completely deaf. So tonight's going to be a wash.
Can you hear this? Can you hear this? Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, well, I've had a fuck of a day,
Holly
guys.
You said grape nuts and hard. The same sentence. God,
we did. What happened to you today?
Well, you know, today's always my day off, and I...
You had to work today, you said.
I worked today. And then I came back home. Oh, I forgot to mention that when I came home after work, there was a lizard in my house.
A wizard?
A lizard.
Oh, lizard.
I heard wizard too. Was Hagrid hanging out at your house, like jizzing all over the place?
It's Hagrid's marathon right now, so he was in my house.
Please have a wizard in your house, because this story is going to get way more interesting, I know.
Well, my dog bit its tail off.
Oh, Jesus.
And then as I went to put it in, I wasn't going to put it in the trash if it was still alive, so like I like held up the bag, because he wasn't moving,
the
obviously.
The tail was still alive?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. So I took the whole thing. I just kind of took a baggie and like turned it inside out and just grabbed all of his parts. Oh, and I'm like looking at it, and his little eye opens up and is looking at me. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's got this severed tail. A possible organ has fallen out, but his eye opened. So I didn't put him in the trash.
What'd you do with him?
Well, I set the bag open next to the tree.
Oh, okay.
So if he is alive, he can escape the bag and go live another life. But this, he was really big. Like, I've never seen a lizard this long. Like, his body was the length of a pint glass, and then his tail was the equal distance.
How did he get into your place?
I have no idea.
Like, maybe
and I
through
leave the doors open, because I detest flies.
Maybe, yeah.
I have no idea. Sometimes I leave the garage open when I come home on lunch breaks. So he could come in the garage and then somehow snuck in while I was going out.
Oh, my God.
So that's crazy. Don't know. But
are you grossed out by lizards?
No. I like reptiles. And at first I thought it might have been a mouse, because Jaeger was just... So when he came out of his crate, he was like... yelling under the DVD case, and I was like, there's nothing down there. Like, I got down and looked, and then like 5 minutes after he went to the bathroom, he was in the kitchen sniffing and under the beer fridge, and I'm like, well, maybe there is something. And sure enough, it was a lizard. But yeah, that's been my day. So then we talked for a little more. I got in the car to come home, had to call somebody in North Carolina who's having, had to talk, and just got off the phone with her, so my head hurts. I've drank probably 48 ounces of water today. Is that right? 48?
48 ounces maybe. Of liquor today? Oh, that's good.
Water.
I think
water.
You're doing good.
Yeah.
It's a good start today.
Whatever Nalgene bottles are, I've had two of them.
Wow. Yeah, I've had a very long day myself, so got up, mowed the lawn, cleaned the pool, had to take my son to a pool party, then I had to go to another birthday party, and it was just like nonstop, just go, so yeah, so it's been a very long day for myself as well.
Well,
I walked 10 miles today.
I would excellent. Walk 10,000 miles. And
I would walk 500
so,
more.
So, funny story about that song, the Proclaimers that sang that song.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived down in Buffalo in Allentown, they had a, it was called the Allentown, it wasn't the Art Festival, it was just got Art Festival, and they closed off Allentown Street there, and the Proclaimers played right in front of my house.
Cool.
Like, there was a stage there and everything. I mean, other than that song, I would not know any other Proclaimers song.
Right.
Than the 10,000 Miles song, but I was like, well, free show.
How old were you?
It's a thing.
I was 24 or 5. I don't know.
Cool.
Don't quite remember. I am going to get a second cup of coffee, because I do need it tonight, and I will be ready to go.
Cool.
Okay, okay.
I'll go pee again while you do that.
I'll drink Jameson while you're both gone.
Do it!
And eat chocolate.